program då. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text 33, Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. Artasrayam tvam sabdasya drashtu linga tvam eva cha tanmatra tvam cha nambaso lakshanam kavayo vidu artasrayam tvam sabdasya drashtu linga tvam eva cha tanmatra tvam cha nabasyo lakshanam kavayo vidu artasraya tvam
that which
conveys the meaning of an object. Sabdasya of sound. Drastu of the speaker. Lingatvam, that which indicates the presence. Eva also. Cha and. Tat mantram, the subtle element. Cha and. Nabasa of ether. Lakshanam, definition. Kavaya, learned person. Vidhu, no. Translation. Persons who are learned and who have true knowledge define sound as that which conveys the idea of an object, indicates the presence of a speaker screened from our view and constitutes the subtle form of ether. Translation responsively. Persons who are learned
and have true knowledge
define sound
as that which conveys
the idea of an object.
Indicates the presence of a speaker,
screened from our view,
and constitutes the subtle form of ether.
Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Thank you, Prabhupada. It is very clear herein that as soon as we speak of hearing, there must be a speaker. Without a speaker, there is no question of hearing. Therefore, the Vedic knowledge, which is known as Shruti, or that which is received by hearing, is also called Apurusha. Apurusha means not spoken by any person materially created. It is stated in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Rida. The sound of Brahman, or Veda, are first impregnated into the heart of Brahma, the original learned man, Adikavaye. How did he become learned? Whenever there is learning, there must be a speaker and the process of hearing. But Brahma was the first created being. Who spoke to him? Since no one was there, who was the spiritual master to give knowledge? He was the only living creature. Therefore, the Vedic knowledge was imparted within his heart by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone as Paramatma. Vedic knowledge is understood to be spoken by the Supreme Lord, and therefore it is free from the defects of material understanding. Material understanding is defective. If we hear something from a conditioned soul, it is full of defects. All material, mundane information is tainted by illusion, error, cheating, imperfection of the senses. Because Vedic knowledge was imparted by the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental to material creation, it is perfect. If we receive that Vedic knowledge from Brahma in the disciplic succession, then we receive perfect knowledge. Every word we hear has a meaning behind it. As soon as we hear the word water, there is a substance, water, behind that word. Similarly, as soon as we hear the word God, there is a meaning to it. If we receive that meaning and explanation of God from God himself, then it is perfect. But if we speculate about the meaning of God, it is imperfect. Bhagavad Gita, which is the science of God, is spoken by the personality of Godhead himself. This is perfect knowledge. Mental speculators, or so-called philosophers, who are researching what is actually God, will never understand the nature of God. The science of God has to be understood in disciplic succession from Brahma, who was first instructed about knowledge of God by God himself. We can understand the knowledge of God by hearing Bhagavad Gita from a person authorized in the disciplic succession. When we speak of seeing, there must be form. By our sense perception, the beginning experience is sky. Sky is the beginning of form, and from the sky other forms emanate. The object of knowledge and the sense perception begins, therefore, from the sky. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshura Militam Mena Tasma Shri Guruve Namaha Vancha Kalpa Thrubhyascha Kripa Sindhuvayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhya Vaishnavebhya Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu. So Lord Brahma, so it's an amazing purport again by Srila Prabhupada. From this purport, the message that's being taught to us is that the science of God has to be understood in the disciplic succession of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the Nikabaya, the first person. Here it is said, we have to hear from a speaker. Tena Brahma Rida, the Vedas, truth, complete knowledge, was impregnated in the heart, the Rida, of Lord Brahma. Because he was in a situation where there wasn't any other living being. And he had to hear from someone, as it's pointed out here. So he heard from the Lord, the original man, Adikavaya. So it was interesting. Recently, I had an opportunity at this program to discuss a little bit about God and the cause of all causes. Because I was asked to speak at a conference about sacred Australia. And this was a really interesting thing, and it was a great discovery was made by father of a friend of mine who discovered ancient bones of Aboriginal culture, of a living entity here in Australia, which dated back way beyond what they thought was man inhabiting this continent. And he's regarded as the first man. We can understand from the Shastra here, from the purport, that actually Lord Brahma was the first man. But anyway, this person, and they call him the Mungo Man. And it was interesting in that we had an opportunity to actually talk there, and there's a campaign that they're doing to bring Mungo Man. Mungo Man was found, and then he was locked away in the National Capital Museum. So his bones are there. To the indigenous culture, this is a great offence. And they're wanting to bring the bones of Mungo Man back to the place of his origin and that he rests in peace. And it's a worthwhile campaign. So anyway, they asked us to speak at this occasion. Bhakti also spoke. The interesting thing that was there was that they found that this ancient personality, who modern science thinks was very, very primitive, actually showed signs of deep spirituality in the way that this person was actually buried. There were ornaments, and his body was embalmed, and there were sacred items around his body, which indicates that even thousands and thousands, they're looking at 30, 40,000 years ago, unlike what the current scientists are saying about mankind, how they were so primitive, practically animals with no regard for spirituality or anything else, that actually this person actually had subtleties of spirituality. So we understand also that now they're finding out that the DNA of the early Aboriginal people here in Australia actually stems from India, that the DNA is exactly the same as the Aboriginal tribes of India. And so we understand that they came. So actually we can understand that some of this Vedic knowledge was there even thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. So this was Mungo Man. And so there's a campaign of bring Mungo Man back home. So it was interesting. It was really good. So, but actually we understand and we know that actually Lord Brahma is the first living entity, the first in this great universe. And he became the creator, the co-creator, Lord Brahma. And Krishna spoke to Lord Brahma from within his heart. So Krishna actually guided and directed him from within his heart. And this is Paramatma. Paramatma. So often we have a situation where people say, you know, I heard God's voice. God told me to do it. You know, we have the jihadist today who are saying, God has told us to kill the infidels. God has told me to commit this horrible crime. And in history we even see the Christians, they went on their crusades under the direction of the then leader or the Pope, who were supposed to have heard the voice of God, go and kill all those people that don't believe in our faith. This is nonsense. This is not really understanding that God is speaking from within, but actually something else is telling them to do something. There's an example recently which I thought was really interesting in the news. There was a lady and her husband had the bad habit of using God's name in vain, right? He used to blaspheme and, And so she said, I had to kill him. There was nothing else wrong with him. But when they asked her, why did you kill him? He was taking the Lord's name in vain and God told me I should kill him. So she killed him, so she went to prison. So the question is that does God actually talk to us? As he did to Lord Brahma. Does God talk to us? Or is God in... Is it God or is it my mind? Who knows, really? So we have to actually look at this. And sometimes we can make the mistake, as some of these people, that what they're hearing is their mind, and their mind is saying, do this! And they think, yes, okay, God is telling me to do this. So Srila Prabhupada, I wanted to give you a quote of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada says that, one who cannot control his mind lives always with the greatest enemy. So when you can't control your mind, your mind is dictating to you what you should do, that is your greatest enemy. And then Prabhupada said, and thus his life and its mission are spoiled. So what's the mission of human life? To become enlightened, to become God conscious, to actually understand that we are not these material bodies and go to our real home in the spiritual world. So Prabhupada says here that a mind always lives, if you're living in this consciousness of listening to your mind, that is the greatest enemy. As long as the mind remains unconquered, then that's the enemy. That's the enemy. And then one has to serve the dictates of lust, anger, greed, so many different things. And we saw that wonderful play. I don't know if all of you saw it, but we're going to repeat it at the Rath Yatra. Wonderful play that Arjun Sakha and Manmohan put on about the mind. Did anybody see that play? Wasn't it far out? In the beginning I had my reservations because I thought, oh God, a brahmachari play. Uh-oh, here we go. But actually it was really, really thoughtful and it really inspired me. And every time now, you know, in our life situation, when the mind starts talking to you, I have this picture of Manmohan going, you know how he did that? I keep seeing Manmohan. Oh, that's my mind speaking. So I keep remembering that. So this is it. So the mind pushes us to act in a certain way. And when we're actually coming from this conditioned life, it's an addiction. It's an addiction. All sense gratification, lust, anger, greed, avarice, so many things, it's an addiction. And you know, with an addiction, it's hard to break an addiction. Who amongst you was a smoker before they became a devotee, hopefully? Yeah. How hard was it to actually try and give up smoking before Krishna consciousness? Did you ever try to give up smoking before Krishna consciousness? Huh? It was so difficult. You know, my daughter is still struggling with it, and they put patches on and this on and everything. It's so difficult. As soon as we came to Krishna consciousness, and I've been doing yoga, I've been doing meditation and all that, but still, as soon as I came to Krishna consciousness, the process of Krishna consciousness was so much easier to control the mind, because it's the mind that's telling you now you need to smoke. And even to this day, just to show you how deep that addiction is to this nicotine, it's actually, they say that's it's the hardest drug to give up, nicotine. Even to this very day, this is 50 years later from me stopping smoking. Some of you know that I do some painting. You know, I like doing artwork. And when I was going to college, art college, at the end of doing a painting, I would sit back, roll a cigarette, and smoke a cigarette. Sometimes there was something else in the cigarette, but let's just talk about tobacco at this point of time. And anyway, so I would sit there and smoke. And so to this very day, I've just completed a nice painting of the Maha Mantra and everything, and I stand back to have a look, and my hand goes, hang on a tick. It's still there. This deep addiction is still there. So this is the pushing of the mind. The mind pushes you. So we have to break this cycle. And that's only done by the process of devotional service. Devotional service can break that push. So there was an example recently that I came across about the pushings of the mind and how Krishna actually talks to us. Also, when we know we shouldn't be doing something, there is that silent voice within saying, don't do that, Bhakta. Let's not go there. Or it's Madhmohan going, don't do that. Anyway, there was an example. This devotee it started off as a genuine sort of thing, trying to preach online, and he was on Facebook and making friends on Facebook, right? And he was cultivating people, but then there was a nasty side to it as well. He got to talk to young girls on Facebook, single boy, and some of them were a little young, right? So he kept on talking to them and interacting and so on and so forth, and they were underage girls. So this one girl invited him to her home, and the old lust comes in. You know, there is Madhmohan coming, you know. When he was showing the picture, you know. And his mind got carried away, and so he thought, I'll go and see this girl. So he went, and he drove around, he got the address, and he's driving around, and somehow or other he just couldn't find where this address was. And he went up this way, and he went that way, and he's checking his map and everything. And somehow he just couldn't get there. And in his mind it was going, go back to the temple. Go back to the temple. Don't do this. Go back to the temple. But the other side, the mind was going, no, 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 you've got to go. This is really good. She's a nice girl. Blah, blah, blah. Eventually, he went. And he arrived at the girl's house and knocked on the door. And a young girl answered the door and invited him in. As soon as he got in, the police were there. Thank you. You're coming with us. They took him to prison, because the girl was underage, and they saw him as a child sex exploiter. Yeah. So this devotee got arrested. Later, and he went to prison, and later he realized and understood that when he wanted to go there, there were so many signs indicating, don't do this, go back to the temple. That was Krishna. But the mind was saying, no, no, you can enjoy. So this was, and he didn't heed those instructions, and those instructions were coming from Paramatma. So we have that also in our lives. There are many, many examples of when we are actually doing something and the mind is telling us one thing and there's the other, you know, Paramatma telling us not to do this. So the mind, when the mind is conquered, when one voluntarily conquers the mind, then actually we have the opportunity of actually connecting with Krishna. And this is our challenge. We have to challenge ourselves. Do we want this? Now, how do we do that? We have to very diligently, you know, like any, there's the 12-step plan when you're an addict, when you're either a narcotics addict or when you're an alcoholic, there's the 12-step plan, right? First of all, you have to give up, just stop your addiction. And then you have to work in a series of steps to get to being free from this and understanding that you're never going to be free from this addiction. So we as conditioned souls in this material world also have to be really aware we are never going to get out of the clutches of the mind of Maya until we're back in the spiritual realm, right? So we have to remember that. And they say you have to associate with people of like mind, that you associate with other people that are on the same program. This is the program here, the 12-step plan here in the temple is where we actually learn how to control our senses and our mind. And the other thing that they also say is there has to be diligent regularity in this program. That means you do the same thing day in, day out. And the more regular you are, the more you're in control of your mind. The less regulated you are, your mind is out of control. And you can see that in people, you know. And you have to, and that is clearly pointed out by Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was the perfect example of a person that had regularity in his life. He would walk at this time. He would translate at this time. He would wake up at this time. He would do this at that time. He would meet people at this time. This is so very, very important. And this regularity actually allows us to control our mind. When we control our mind, then we can actually come closer to Krishna. So we control our mind by following in the disciplic succession as being enunciated right down from Lord Brahma. There's an interesting section that I wanted, in regards to this about conquering the mind, there's a section that I wanted to read to you that Srila Prabhupada wrote in a book called Dharma, the Way of Transcendence. Dharma, the Way of Transcendence is a book that Prabhupada wrote. And this is what he says. By serving the Guru and inquiring from him, we come to a point where Krishna will enlighten us from within. Krishna, the Supreme Guru, first imparted knowledge in the heart of Lord Brahma. We're reading this here. The original person in the universe. Tene Brahma Hrida Adikavaye. This is actually from Srimad Bhagavatam 111. Krishna is situated in everyone's heart as super soul, and as you become purified, he speaks to you from within. So realizations. All of a sudden you start to realize that Krishna is speaking to you. Prabhupada then says, actually, he is always speaking to us. But in our impure condition, we cannot hear him. So Krishna is there always. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Krishna confirms that he is the source of our knowledge. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivistu matam smriti mahapohanam cha. I'm situated within the heart of everyone, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So the Paramatma, the Super Soul, Krishna, is always prepared to help every one of us, provided we serve him. So Krishna will help, provided we serve him and take his instructions. He says in Bhagavad Gita 10:10, to those who are always engaged in serving me, with great love and devotion, I will give the understanding by which they can come to me. So this is the instructions from Bhagavad Gita. And this is the contribution that Srila Prabhupada made. You know, prior to Prabhupada, and it's been said so often, there are so many commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, and we've all read different commentaries of Bhagavad Gita, but Prabhupada was emphatic that this had to be the Bhagavad Gita as it is. So this is as Krishna spoke it. And it's only through his purity in line in the disciplic succession that he could actually translate the Bhagavad Gita and give the Bhagavad Gita to us. 100%. So what is written in the Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada is Krishna speaking to us. So this is absolutely so important. And then the absolute truth is taught to us by Krishna himself through Bhagavad Gita. And through this chain of disciplic succession coming right back to Lord Brahma. This is the lineage that we've been linked to. We're so very, very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada was able to come to the Western world. And when you think about it, it is an amazing, amazing situation. You know, because of the 50th anniversary year, we've had a chance to actually really meditate on what it took for Prabhupada to come here and the early days of how he came. And it was such an unusual circumstance, really. When you think about it, I was listening to a tape by Hridaya Nanda Maharaj, a lecture by Hridaya Nanda Maharaj yesterday, and he was saying that time in history was so unique that people actually listened to Prabhupada. It was the 70s, and we all say, well, yeah, that was the hippie era. But there was never, ever a time like that before in history where there was such a revolution of consciousness. Never. It was a period of maybe 15, 20 years, maximum. Australia was a little bit behind, so we carried it over in the 70s and 80s. But that 60s and early 70s was a pocket in history where a unique thing happened. The younger generation were fed up with materialism. They had fed up with that. They were a sponge for new knowledge. And the knowledge that they wanted was from the East. They wanted knowledge, you know, popular things like Yogananda's autobiography of a yogi, the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Everybody was into some sort of an alternative philosophy from Eastern philosophy. And it was in, you know, I mean, every second person was linked with some sort of, young people were linked with some sort of yoga or meditation, and there were gurus galore coming, there was Sri Chinmoy, Muktananda, there Maharishi. It was like an incredible point of time. And in that, Krishna then sent Srila Prabhupada. Just at that time, just when the fertile minds of these young people were looking for an alternative, were looking for something to counter the materialistic way of life of their parents. Hey man, you can have the material world. We know, we just want peace and love, man. Flowers in our hair. You know? And this was, it was such a unique, I just got at the tail end of it, really. And we were in Australia, so it sort of continued on a little bit here. But it was an incredible age. And then as soon as it was there, it was gone. The next generation, back into materialism, wasn't it? Back into making money, who cares, you know, back into peace and love, forget it. No, that was for my parents. They were all hippies. So it was a unique point of time. And Prabhupada, Krishna sent Prabhupada at that time to pick up those souls. And that was just such an amazing thing. So it's through Krishna's arrangement and through this parampara that it actually happened. So we have to control our mind. Our mind hates regularity. This is that point again. It hates it. Doesn't like it. And if you want to find out if a person is actually under the control of their mind or they're actually striving to be under the control of Krishna, go to a person's room. Go to their room where they spend the most time. Okay? If there is junk everywhere, that is an uncontrolled mind. And this is symptomatic of so many other different things. If you see, and Prabhupada was like this, in his room, everything, he travelled all over the world, but everything had to be in its place. If you are regulated like that, then it makes it so much easier to control the mind. If you're regulated that, okay, I wake up every day at this time, Not that you let it go by the whim of your mind. I feel like sleeping until 6:30 today. And the mind says, yes, you should sleep a little longer, you poor thing. You know, you've worked so hard. Have another half an hour. There we go. Regulate it. And it's not that we force our mind to do things that are out of line. And then your mind says, okay, chant your rounds. Yes, I'll chant my round. Looking, oh, I'll clean this, I'll do this. No. Focus. Really chant your name of God. Really chant that holy mantra. And then that becomes, and the mind hates that. And we all experience it when we chant our rounds, you know. Your mind is going, oh, listen, you really should be doing something else at this time, you know. It's chanting. I mean, I know you have to chant your rounds, but, you know, you should actually check if this was done and that was done. It's like, shut up, mind. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, the classic example of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he said, why don't you just beat your mind with a stick in the morning and a shoe at night time? It's like it's a separate entity. It's like this alien in your body that's telling you to do these things. Shut up! I just want to be Krishna conscious. So if we develop our regularity, then we actually will make progress. And Prabhupada guarantees it. Prabhupada said that if you actually follow this process, just this one lifetime, you will see Krishna. You will see the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Imagine that. You will actually become connected, and Krishna loves you so much. This powerful Supreme Personality who created all the universes, not this universe where Lord Brahma is, but all the universes, that personality will have a personal connection and personal interrelationship with you. And Prabhupada even said at one point in your Krishna consciousness, if you follow this process of disciplic succession, at one point, Krishna will come to you. Through the via media of your spiritual master, your spiritual master will say, Bhakta so-and-so, this is Krishna. Krishna, this is Bhakta so-and-so. And then Krishna will extend his hand, and you will shake Krishna's hand, and you will never let it go. You'll always be with Krishna. This is the promise that the great acharyas, great learned people, promising us. Sometimes we think, oh, is this actually, and the mind comes in, oh, is this actually real? Is this fair dinkum, as they say in Australia? Is this really fair dinkum? And Prabhupada is such an intelligent person. Bhaktisiddhanta was such an intelligent person. So many people, they are telling you, this material world is temporary, it's nothing. It's not your home. So we have to follow that. And the example of this perceiving the material, the blunt material senses, is the example that Prabhupada gives of a blunt knife. If our senses are blunt, if we're blunt in our attitude towards Krishna consciousness, we can't cut through the snares of Maya. But if we sharpen the knife, you can cut through it very nicely. So the sharpening process is our sadhana. Is our sadhana. And you actually have to sharpen the knife. You have to do that. So this is our process. And this process has been handed down from guru to disciple, right back to Lord Brahma. And there has to be adjustments made for time, place and circumstance. That's always the case. Right from the early days, Ramanuja Acharya changed things, Madhva Acharya changed things, Lord Chaitanya changed things to suit the time. Prabhupada came, he was in the hippie era, he changed things. It provided change. And then it is now up to us and our intelligence in the line of disciplic succession through the disciplic succession through the gurus that if things need to be changed, we have to intelligently change things. One of the things is understanding that we're living in a different age now. It's not the 70s anymore. That culture of the hippie, amen, love, peace, and spirituality from the Eastern Bloc, it's just not there. People are into materialism, so we have to think of really interesting ways to engage people in Krishna consciousness. We have to use our intelligence and think, how can I subtly help people? How can I influence them in their lives? Does it mean that I have to change some things? And that's what's required. So we have to use our intelligence, and that sharpening process, as I said, sharpening our blunt material sense, is to actually do our sadhana very well. And if we purify our eyes and our senses, we'll be able to see God. Just purifying our senses, we'll be able to see God and hear God and talk to God and be with God. This is our guarantee from our founder Acharya, because Prabhupada had that. He was asked, you know, by reporters, do you see God? When do you see God? He said, I see God all the time. Krishna is there all the time. So this is what we're striving for, and this is the process of bhakti. This is the process that we're here for. Every day, the same thing. Keep on sharpening your knife. 4:30, 4 o'clock, wake up, do your sadhana, keep chanting, follow the principles, associate with devotees. That's the 12-step addiction plan within ISKCON. Right? Follow those processes. The guarantee is there will always be that influence of Maya ready to take you away. Be careful. But if you stick to the plan, you will achieve the goal of seeing Krishna. This is amazing. So now I wanted to just talk a little bit back to Lord Brahma, our first Adikavaya, the first personality, Lord Brahma. When Lord Brahma learnt, what Lord Brahma learnt, he revealed to us through an amazing poem, an amazing hymn called the Brahma Samhita. Prabhupada was so enthusiastic about the Brahma Samhita, he actually encouraged the devotees to chant the Brahma Samhita every single day. We do, partially, when we greet the deities, we have the major verses of the Brahma Samhita. The Brahma Samhita is amazing. These hymns of Lord Brahma were recited or sung countless millennia ago. It was like millions and millions of years ago. And he recited these prayers, this poem, this hymn, prior to the act of creation. So before he started creating, he sang this verse. Now the text of this amazing verse actually manifested itself in the 16th century, and it was discovered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was exploring different manuscripts in a library of an ancient temple, which is now Kerala, and in South India. So he actually was researching in this library. They used to have libraries where you can see it online, where there's still, you know, parchment, and there's written, the scriptures were written, handwritten. And these parchments, these texts, these wonderful treaties were treated as Shastra deities. So they worshipped these scriptures of the great Acharyas. So, and they were just so respectful, you know, that they would be placed on the altar. And in that, Srila Prabhupada, we know now that, you know, through the marathon's going on, there's book distribution going on, we always have to be really mindful about treating the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavad Gita and any of Srila Prabhupada's books, just as they did in those early days, that these shastras are just so sacred. You know, that we don't keep the shastras on the floor, the books on the floor. You don't touch the books with your feet. You make sure that you don't eat and spill food on the shastra. Just as you have a deity of Krishna, you wouldn't do those things, right? So in the same way, the shastras have to be really kept neat and clean and so on and so forth, in the right place and dusted. How many people, when you go to a person's home and you see there's the Bhagavatam, yes, I bought the Bhagavatams, and you go up to the Bhagavatams, you go, it's like dust and cobwebs, and you know, you've got to make sure that they're sacred and you look after them. And even when we're doing book distribution, you know, like somebody in the old days in Melbourne, we actually used to give the books away. We didn't ask people to buy them. We would be doing paraphernalia sales, and the devotees would give books away. So the money we made from paraphernalia sales allowed us to buy so many books from the BBT, and we would just go out on Hari Nam and say, here's a Back to Godhead, here's a coming Back, or Chant and Be Happy, and we'd just give them away. And then we used to have somebody else, remember Sukadev? We used to have somebody else following the kirtan party who would collect all the books that were chucked in the rubbish bin and so on and so forth. And then we'd dust them off, and whichever were good, we'd redistribute it. So, you know, we have to really be mindful when we give a book away that they'll treasure it. And if you have that consciousness when we're doing the marathon that these books are so sacred and that you have such an affection for these books that they're no different to Krishna himself, then the person that you're connecting with will also understand that and feel that from you. Wow, this is really important to this person. You know? So, this is really important. So, they used to have these scriptures in libraries, and Lord Chaitanya was researching these libraries. Now, Lord Chaitanya at that stage, this was when he had just taken sannyas. He was, can you imagine this? This 25-year-old golden avatar. The most beautiful personality. You know, he was... How tall was he, Sukadeva? It was... 14 feet? I thought it was 9 feet. Nine foot. Yeah, he was a tall man. So Nitin, he was even bigger than you and me. So he's huge, but he was beautifully built. You know, this gorgeous personality, chanting and dancing all the way from Puri to South India, you know. Thousands of people following him. Thousands of people following him. This is his great... And he was spreading the love of God. Chant Hare Krishna and you'll be happy. You know, you saw this gorgeous personality in total ecstasy. Who wouldn't, you know? Wow, yeah, I will, you know, we'll follow him, you know. So this was amazing. And thousands followed him in this Harinam. So he reached the temple of Adikeshava in Trivandrum. And there he, in the Trivandrum district... And Sri Chaitanya's principal biographer, Krishnadas Kaviraj Maharaj, writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila, chapter 9, I just wanted to read this for you, that upon beholding the holy image of Adikeshava, Krishna, so this is the deity of Krishna, in the temple, Chaitanya was overwhelmed with spiritual ecstasy and offered fervent prayers and chanted and danced in rapture, a wondrous sight that was received with astonished appreciation by the devotees there. So this gorgeous personality dancing before in ecstasy. And so then he would discuss with esoteric matters with the Brahmins of that particular temple. And then through this library, he found one chapter of the Brahma Samhita. One chapter. There are actually, in records, there are hundreds of components to this beautiful poem by Lord Brahma. But he found this one chapter. And on reading it, upon discovering this manuscript, Krishnadas Kaviraj explains, upon discovering this manuscript, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell in great ecstasy and fell into an intense mystic rapture that overflowed onto the physical realm, producing a profusion of tears and trembling and perspiration. So this gorgeous man is just... personality of Godhead himself, an incarnation of Krishna, has just received this most wonderful prayer of Lord Brahma, one single chapter of it, and he's gone into total ecstasy. So it's described that this Brahma Samhita, Prabhupada explains, this Brahma Samhita is the most beautiful jewel in the Vaishnav treasury. The most beautiful jewel. And when you read it, actually, if you actually have a chance to read it on a regular basis, In the Sanskrit, it is just so fulfilling. It's really a wonderful thing to do. So then Lord Chaitanya employed a scribe, and this is the way they used to do it at that time. He would copy the whole Brahma Samhita. He got somebody to copy it, and then he took it when he journeyed back north. And when he arrived in Puri, Mahaprabhu presented the Brahma Samhita to people like Ramananda Roy, Vasudev Datta, and they in turn also copied it, and then the other devotees got word of it. You know, just like nowadays, if there's a new book that comes out by one of the great acharyas, you know, one of our esteemed gurus in the line of disciplic succession, all of a sudden there's a new interesting book that comes out. Everybody wants to get it, you know. Oh, where's Devamrita Swami's book? Have you got Devamrita Swami's book? Oh, it's far out. Yo, really? Yeah, I want it. Or Radhana Swami's book, you know, Journey Within. When can I get that book, you know? It's like, so this was the same thing. The devotees, the Vaishnavas, were so keen. So everybody was copying out the Brahma Samhita so they could have it in their home. And so eventually his Brahma Samhita was broadcast everywhere and became one of the major texts in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. So, and Prabhupada, Krishna Das Kaviraj explains, there is no scripture equal to the Brahma Samhita as far as the final spiritual conclusion is concerned. So in the Brahma Samhita, it is encapsulating everything about Krishna consciousness. This is the wonderful thing. He goes on to say, indeed, that scripture is the supreme revelation of the glories of Lord Govinda, for it reveals the topmost knowledge about him. Since all conclusions are briefly presented in the Brahma Samhita, it is essential amongst all the Vaishnava literatures. So Prabhupada continues on, and he gives a synopsis, which I also wanted to read, just to give you the importance of this incredible poem by Lord Brahma, the founder of our disciplic succession. And this is Prabhupada, and I quote Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada says, in the Brahma Samhita, the philosophical conclusion of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference, is presented. So this is the uniqueness of the Vaishnava tradition. This sets us aside from everyone else. The simultaneous oneness and difference, that is Krishna. You know? So this first and foremost. Prabhupada then goes on to explain, it also presents methods of devotional service, 18 syllable Vedic hymns, discourses on the soul, the super soul, fruit of activities, an explanation of the Karma Gayatri, the Karma Bija, and the original Mahavishnu, and the specific descriptions of the spiritual world, specifically Goloka Vrindavan. The Brahma Samhita also explains the demigod Ganesh, Garbhadayaksai Vishnu, the origin of the Gayatri Mantra, the form of Govinda, and his transcendental position and abode. Actually, the origin of the Gayatri Mantra, those of you that chant the Gayatri Mantra, the last two verses of the Gayatri Mantra were given to Lord Brahma. By who? By Goddess Saraswati, correct? So when we chant our Gayatri Mantras, we're exactly chanting the same mantra that Lord Brahma used for his enlightenment. Going back thousands and millions of... Can you grasp that? It's just amazing. Anyway, this is the wonder of Srila Prabhupada. You know? You just keep on, year after year, you just keep on being blown out by the absolute amazing personality Srila Prabhupada was. Prabhupada goes on further. The origin of the Gayatri Mantra, the form of Govinda in his transcendental position and abode, the living entities, the highest goal, the goddess Durga, the meaning of austerities, the five gross elements, love of Godhead, impersonal Brahman, and initiation of Lord Brahma, and the vision of transcendental love enabling one to see the Lord, the steps of devotional service, see, there we go again, the vision of transcendental love enabling one to see the Lord, actually see the Lord. The steps of devotional service are also explained, the mind, yoga nidra, the goddess of fortune, devotional service in spontaneous ecstasy, incarnations beginning with Lord Ramchandra, deities, the conditioned souls and its duties, the truth about Vishnu, prayers, Vedic hymns, Lord Shiva, Vedic literature, personalism, impersonalism, good behavior, and many other subjects are also discussed. There are also descriptions of the sun and the universal form of the Lord. All these subjects are conclusively explained in a nutshell in the Brahma Samhita. This is from the Madhyalila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, Volume 4, page 37. You can read that there. So the Brahma Samhita consists of a description of the enlightenment of Lord Brahma by Lord Krishna. So here we're describing how Lord Brahma was enlightened from within. This was due to Krishna instructing him from within. So there's nothing vague about the Brahma Samhita. There's nothing that's like, oh, that sounds a little bit, you know, there's no, it's not dim, it's not nihilistic, there's no angels, there's no bright lights, there's no wispiness, there's no dreamy visions or harps or choirs or anything. It's just real fact of this is Goloka, this is Vrindavan, so many things. There's no concocted vision of God. It's not a concoction. Just like, you know, Michelangelo's understanding of God. Well, what do we make God look like when he was asked to do the Sistine Chapel? well, let's paint this old man because he must be the oldest of the old and have this guy with a long white beard and this is God. So there's no concoctions. Rather, it's described here, rather a vibrant, luminescent world in transcendence, colour, form and sound. A beautiful spiritual landscape populated with innumerable, blissful, eternally liberated souls revealing spiritual cognition. It's just like advanced devotees and emotion, all in relationship. Everyone is in relationship with the all-blissful, all-attractive personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. So everybody's just focused on the Supreme Lord. And we, when we read this this Brahma Samhita on a regular basis, we get a glimpse of that spiritual world. And that's why Prabhupada asked us to chant this Brahma Samhita. When we see the beautiful forms of the deities, you get a glimpse every now and again in our dull senses. Every now and again, you know, Govindamati Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. We see Krishna. We see the beautiful Radha Balabha, Sri Sri Gwanita and Jagannathji Baladev and Subhadra. You know, we get that inspiration. And Lord Brahma, this whole presentation is the transcendental world, not this vague reflection of this material world. This is the spiritual world that we're actually getting an opportunity to have a glimpse into. Lord Brahma's vision is shared by humanity if we want to take it that way. But then Lord Brahma also says, only a very few self-realized souls will take to this instruction. So we consider ourselves incredibly fortunate to be at the feet of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who's giving us this knowledge. So it's the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. And following that disciplic succession, he followed it diligently and honestly. That is this bhakti yoga. This is that wonderful thing. And we will gradually have our own experience of seeing the Supreme Lord and being a dedicated devotee. And the Paramatma will speak to you in due course of time. Throughout the scriptures, it is said, you know, Prabhupada emphasizes that the spiritual master is a vine media for the Paramatma. So you get instruction through your guru, through the books, through other devotees, through life events, through certain actions and behaviors that you see in nature. Again, Krishna is teaching us so many different things. In every way, we have to see that. And by heeding such indications, when we see, you know, like say, for example, you see the diligentness of, say, even in a material nature, of a bumblebee collecting its nectar from a flower and going back to the hive. Again, we can learn from that on a regular basis, this little bee just diligently does its service. This can be us. So if we can learn that, that's an indication of the Supreme Lord giving us some instruction. We can learn from everything. Or the faithfulness of a dog. You know, we see a dog will do everything for its master, and it's happy when its master comes and doesn't need a reward, whether it gets fed or not. It serves the master. So in a sense, Prabhupada also you know, tells us that have that mentality of just surrender to the spiritual master. That's why we wear the neck beads. Did you know that? Our neck beads are our dog collar. Some are older dogs and they can loose the beads a little bit, but it's still our dog collar. So we're at the mercy of the spiritual master like that, so we have to be dedicated. So the greatest way to develop communication with the Lord personally is through Sankirtan. Sankirtan. Going out and actually connecting, preaching, teaching people about Krishna, bringing people to this disciplic succession, one way or another. This spiritual science, the science of God, this is what we're meant to do. This is our mission in life. And when we have that, Krishna provides the intelligence and the abilities to be able to do that. So this is a wonderful thing. And again, you have to work it with time, place and circumstance. So there has to be a speaker and there has to be a hearer. And after hearing, if we hear this philosophy, we have to speak it. I was just speaking to Varadhatri Prabhu just before, you know, about if we're not speaking this philosophy, it becomes shriveled up. You know, we have to speak it. We have to go out and engage people. We have to work with people and encourage them to this disciplic succession. And if we don't, then we frizzle up. We just sort of are miserly. We have to actually give it to as many people as possible. I'll stop here. Any comments or questions at all, Prabhus, on these topics of Lord Brahmana, our first founder in the disciplic succession? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Shambhu. So you're talking about controlling the mind. There are other ways you can do that. I mean, of course, there's a process, Bhakti Yoga process.
Yeah.
I mean, you can explain a little bit about how the process, what the process is.
Yeah. Well, the first thing you have to realize, and the same as in that, you have to understand that we're addicted to material life, right? So that's first thing. You have to be honest with yourself and say, okay, I'm addicted to material life. When you agree with that, that's the first step in the plan. Then you take the next initiative. Okay, how do I get out of this? And then you have to go to the authorities, and they will guide and direct you. And you start off like somebody, you know, that is a heavy heroin addict. It's not necessarily straight away told to give up completely. They go on a methadone program and slowly they wean off. So in the same way, in Krishna consciousness, when we are presenting this knowledge, we don't necessarily straight away say, listen, you have to follow the four regulative principles, you have to chant 16 rounds a day, you have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, da 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 da. If you meet somebody on the street, they go, what the hell is this guy talking about? You know, so you have to, in a very intelligent way, just make your move. And I'll never forget, I mean, in the early days, I think I explained it sometime before, we were doing this Mayavad impersonalist meditation program, which involved doing different mystic cities, potentially yoga sutras, and one of the things was levitation. And so we would do this levitation, which was more like frog hopping. And the guru at that time, the spiritual master, we were coming to Krishna consciousness because we showed a little bit of interest in Krishna consciousness. Now, if he would have said, give up your process, we would have said, forget it, and we wouldn't have received that information. But he was intelligent. He said, keep doing what you're doing, but add a little bit of chanting Hare Krishna to it. And we did that, and it changed. After a very short period of time, he said, whatever you do, and he was so serious. It was very blasé, actually, but in a sense, he was so serious. He said, now, whatever you do, don't give up this city program. Don't give up doing that. Because if you do, it could be very dangerous to you. Right? But chant Hare Krishna as well. And he knew. After 2 weeks, we said, oh, forget this other stuff. We just want to chant Hare Krishna. And instead of spending an hour and a half hopping around on the block of foam, you know, we were, and that's what we were doing. If you can imagine, this was the program, the TM program of levitation. We would have this room that was filled with five inch heavy foam, right? And we'd sit in deep meditation, you know, in a lotus position, and then we'd feel, and this is the Kundalini rising, you know, and we'd feel like this, and we go, woo! And we go up, bang, and start hopping around the place, right? So that was it. But there was nothing to it. It was a material thing, right? So then when this guru, this devotee, encouraged us to chant Hare Krishna, you know, we started sitting on our foam after we'd done the hopping and said, hey, this is better fun than the hopping. And then we all started chanting. And first we chanted 8 rounds, then we chanted 16 rounds, then we chanted 32 rounds, and then we chanted 64 rounds. Those of us that weren't working, that is, Bhakti David Asi, we were both working. So we got 32 rounds in, and that was the end of us. You know, I dropped that whole other thing, and we became Krishna conscious devotees. So you take instruction in the disciplic succession. Slowly, 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 like that. And then slowly, 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 you start to hear Krishna. You start to connect with Krishna. And it's done through Sankirtan. In the early days, even when we were doing Sankirtan, the devotees would have discussions with Krishna. They would talk to Krishna. You know, my dear Lord, you know, please engage this person in service. Allow me to sell them something. Because at that stage, we were making money through selling objects, you know. Paintings, cookies, whatever, you know. peanuts, with chocolate-coated peanuts. What did we sell? I mean, there were so many different paraphernalia we sold to make money to build this temple and to build Mayapur. So anyway, you know, Bhakti used to tell me, you know, that Krishna would talk to her. Like, sometimes we'd sell things and there'd be an elevator, right? And people were always chasing you out of the building. They didn't want you to sell in the buildings, right? So Krishna would tell you, go to the fifth floor. Okay, go to the fifth floor. And then go in there, you know. Don't go to the third floor. So you had this little, Krishna, where do I go next? Go next door. Okay, we'll go next door. Go into the picture theater. Right? We actually used to do that. Krishna would tell it. Go, you get the inspiration. Go into the picture theater. They're a captive audience. And then what we would do is we'd crawl in between the seats and say, would you like to buy some peanuts? Or something? Oh, yeah. Oh, we went everywhere. Someone would tell us we were selling paintings. You know, at one stage we were selling these Hong Kong paintings. Sankarnath, you remember the paintings days, don't you?
Yeah.
And we, and we would go everywhere. At 12 o'clock at night, you know, we would have a marathon to raise funds. And 12 o'clock at night, you're thinking, where can I go? Inspiration. Who's open at 12 o'clock at night? Hospitals. Hospitals are open at 12 o'clock at night. There's a person in one of the wards. And so we'd go to the hospitals and sell. Who else is open at 12 o'clock at night? I need to sell. I need to engage in Krishna, someone in Krishna consciousness. Oh, the brothels are open at 12 o'clock at night. Yeah, let's go to the brothels. So we'd go barging into the brothels, you know, and hey, you want to buy a painting? What? 12 o'clock at night and you're selling paintings? Yeah. You want to buy a painting? Okay, come in. And then we'd wait in their reception room. Can you believe this? In their reception room. And the girls would come in and say, oh, they're nice. I'll have that one. I said, okay, yeah, it's $200. You know, oh, hang on a tick. Give me half an hour. Thank you. And we engaged them in Krishna consciousness. It's amazing. You know, we had incidents of what, one classic incident was we used to get kicked out of pubs. Sukadev, you remember this? Were you part of this pastime? These were radical days. These were pioneering days, you know. And we were in this pub, myself and Gopinath Acharya. It was a marathon, we were raising funds, you know. And we'd be selling, and the manager said, get out of here. And I just lined up this guy who was going to buy some paintings off me. And I just thought, wow, fantastic. And he told me to get out. And so, you know, I'm going back to the car and I'm really, really feeling despondent, you know. This guy was going to buy something like $500 worth of paintings, you know. And then Krishna from within, go back. But Krishna, he's just kicked me out. Go back. Go back. You know, intuitively. It wasn't like a voice. Now go back. It was like, intuitively, go back. Really? Oh, I carry what you lack and preserve what you have. Okay, you learn it from Bhagavad Gita. So I went back. So how am I going to get to this guy? He was over the other side of the pub, right? So on my hands and knees, in between the tables, so the manager didn't see me, calling in between the tables, excuse me. The guy drinking and the girls drinking and the band was going, what the hell is that guy with a roll of paintings, right? Then we got to the place where the guy was going to buy and he's drinking with his girlfriend and I'm going, hey mate. And he looks down from his table and there's me under the table showing the paintings. That's the one. And a roll of that, here's your money, mate, you know. Out. And got out and we were enthused because Krishna had directed you, you know, directed you from within. This is Krishna consciousness. It's exciting. If we actually go on Sankirtan, go out and distribute books. Now it's books. Now it's books. And presenting the holy name. Like the ladies, some of my lady friends are just organizing. We're just told, you know, Vara just told me about how they're developing this yoga kirtan party of these beautiful ladies going to these yoga centers and doing bhajan for them, you know? And this is enthralling. This is so good. So you have these adventures. Krishna consciousness is an adventure. It's exciting. It's just so full of fun, you know? Yeah, it's and you've got to allow that in your life. And that will encourage you and Krishna will talk to you. Like I went to two seminars this week as a devotee. right? And it's just so enthralling, you know. And people can't believe it, you know. People, you know, like you're sitting next to someone and they say, oh, so which organization are you with? I'm with the Hare Krishnas. What? You know, and then you get an opportunity to preach, and you watch the lights going on in people's eyes when you actually present the philosophy from this disciplic succession. You see the lights go on in their eyes, that for the first time they're being told the truth. It's wonderful. It's absolutely astounding. So get out there for the marathon, whichever way. Think of different ways of actually distributing Srila Prabhupada's book. Become intelligent. Think, how can we break the mold? How can we infiltrate Maya? And see it as a real adventure, you know? It's good fun. Any other comments? Does this answer your question a bit? To a certain extent? Follow the process. Yeah. Look for adventure. Become a Sankirtan devotee. We're all Sankirtan devotees. Yeah. We're all Sankirtan. Hare Bol.
Mm-hmm. Like the mind is like a memory in the computer, you know, RAM, and you put a RAM memory, and then you can see a lot of time memory for saving. So the mind is like that. Whatever you put in, it will roll in inside. So you have touch screens, you have microphones, and everything goes in the computer, and the computer works it out. So in a similar way, if you avoid materialistic things to put in the mind, and the worst one is television, because it's a
Thank you very much.
Effects, right? One is that it washes away all the conditioning
soul, but on a physical basis, right? Because we are still in this body, on a physical basis, it actually is reconditioning you physically, because it's giving you a different emotion. It's releasing a different chemical into your system. So the more you do that, the more addicted you become to that chemical. Right? So now you don't have to do the other thing anymore, because Krishna consciousness is a higher...
To attain.
Yep. Right? It's a higher feeling, it's a higher experience. It's a higher taste.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Bhakti. That's good. Yes, Prabhu?
Well, talking about spiritual gurus, how do you develop trust on a spiritual guru nowadays? And how do you not believe that our spiritual master would not fall down into Maya later on? So you are putting a little bit of trust on a spiritual guru. Mm-hmm. How do you develop that trust?
Yeah. That's difficult. You have to have faith in guru. I mean, even Srila Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada was always aware that the material energy was so strong. And even he was afraid of falling down. Right? This is the amazing, although he was a pure 100% pure devotee of the Lord Nityasiddha, for the example, he would never ever allow himself to be alone with a lady as a sannyasi. And at one stage they did. They had Prabhupada. This lady wanted the darshan with Prabhupada, and they put him in a room together with, and she was an old lady. And Prabhupada chastised his servants. He said, "You don't ever do that again. There is a chance that I may have fallen down." So you have to have a little bit of faith, right? And we are all in the material world. And even our Guru Maharajas, you know, there is a chance. I mean, my first Guru Maharaj fell away. And, you know, he became enamored by material energy and came away. Luckily now he's coming back into Krishna consciousness and he's doing some great service. He's a good Vaishnava. He's no longer my spiritual master because I've chosen someone else. And that happens. You can do that if that happens. But in all faith you accept that this person is in the disciplic succession coming from Lord Brahma. And if he's following correctly, you're safe. If there is some difficulty, then you can make other arrangements. Your Diksha Guru is one guru, but you have to understand also on the broader basis that we have many gurus. Okay? You have your Diksha Guru who's initiated you and who's one of the foremost Siksha Gurus, but then you also have other Siksha Gurus from this temple, from other spiritual masters, you know, and you're influenced and encouraged by them as well. So in our situation, when our spiritual master fell away, by the mercy of my connection more with Srila Prabhupada, because when I first came to Krishna consciousness, I wanted to surrender to Prabhupada's lotus feet. Prabhupada is always there to protect us, but then in the same token, there are other Vaishnavas that will also help us along the way. And there were great devotees. At that stage, people like Indradumna Swami was a great help to me. Hridayananda Maharaj was also, to the extent where I then surrendered to him. And the interesting thing that you say, when I surrendered after my spiritual master fell away and I wanted to take reinitiation from another guru, I said to Hridayananda Maharaj, there is no way that I could ever really take you as a full, you know, because we're in the illusion in a sense that my first guru was like perfect and there wasn't a chance of him falling away. And he did. And so for us that was devastating. And so when I, in that state of mind, I said to my following guru, there's no way I can ever take you exactly the same way as I did the first guru. There will always be a doubt in my mind. And he said, I can fully understand that and I accept that. And he said, I don't want you to change that consciousness. All I want to do is be your friend and give you the instructions of Srila Prabhupada as best I can. I said, under those conditions, Maharaj, I accept you as my guru. So that has been our relationship. Do you know what I mean? So there is always that chance. But there is also many, many safeguards that will help you. when and if, and hopefully it never has to happen, but it has happened in the past, and devotees have had to live with that. But the overriding thing is, and this is the powerfulness and the greatness of Srila Prabhupada, he is our guru for the next 10,000 years. He is the spiritual epitome. He is the power broker. And everyone else is little satellites of this great sun. Do you know what I mean? Is that okay? So we'll stop here now. Srila Prabhupada ki.